Yeah, just we'll clean it up afterwards.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and start this. If we can dim the lights, this is a few minute presentation. This is going to give an overview. What I'm going to go over tonight is probably three or four parts to this. We're going to talk about this hollow earth theory, how it relates to the lost tribes of Israel. And then we're going to discuss, as it relates to that, the growing earth and or the expanding earth is what which will relate to that. And then what that all means to us. And there's a little speculation at the very end, but I'm backing this up as much as possible with a lot of good evidence. And so I hope you enjoy this. And so this video is an introduction to what we're going to discuss tonight. I didn't write this text, but it's the conclusion of this animator. But he does a really good job at summarizing what this theory is as far as the current knowledge is out there. So one of the big claims is that there's a central sun. They're showing that in this theory. So a lot of people who claim to have know a little bit about this, they estimate that the crust of the Earth is about 600 to 700 to 800 miles. Some estimate 1,200 miles thick. And if you were to fall through the crust of the Earth, if there was a hole going all the way through, you would hit neutral gravity about the center point, which is about 400 miles down. CME means the coronal mass ejection. Okay, so a lot of geologists will say, well, you know, the big problem with the hollow Earth is that when you have an earthquake, there's data we get that tells us that we can hear the earthquake on the other side of the Earth. This shows an example of how those waves during an earthquake would resonate, and I'll show you here in a slide that in a large earthquake that the ringing of it happens for about a whole month. You can still hear the residue. So the earth rings like a bell, and that's having a hollow earth type situation explains why that happens. A lot of people ask, why can't you get up there and just see it for yourself? There's military up there. It's a no-fly zone. Also explains why there's always these military down in the frozen Arctic South. So we'll be talking about this as well. Satellites cannot fly over the North and South Poles in these areas. Airplanes can't either. In fact, Virgin Atlantic just was trying to get permission to save time by flying over the North Pole. So we'll see how that ends up with them. I have a friend who's a private pilot, and he was telling me...
Is this on YouTube?
It is. This is on YouTube. You can find it. Just do a search for Hollow Earth animation. You'll probably find it. So this is a fly inwards. Again, this is just a simulated animation where... he's just giving an idea of what it looks like. It's really hard to explain to somebody, so we're going to use a lot of images. But those that have been here that have described this, they've described the sun as a focused point in the sky. And we'll go over that in a second. Oh, yeah, a friend of mine is a private pilot. I gave him the coordinates of where this area you can't fly over. He says, yeah, I've been to the North Pole plenty of times. And then when I finally pinned him down, and says, hey, look, this is where it's at. Can you look this up? Can you fly there? He's like, oh, that's way north. So he actually, I think, was a little surprised at how far that was. So there's that animation. Okay, we're going to go into the presentation now. Okay, so here's where the story starts. About 7 years ago, I was doing some research about where the Nephites were and the lost. And I was looking at some old maps, and this map is a current map, obviously. And by the way, my current theory is this is where a lot of them were. There's actually a sunken city down over here off the coast of Cuba when that destruction happened, but looking at some ancient maps, there was some from the Chinese and there was some from other places, and then I noticed Gerard Mercator, who you can read, was The Mercator map system is how we draw maps to this day. It was because of him. He modernized our maps, 500 years ago. But he had these strange maps of the North Pole, and on them were these four islands that don't exist on our maps to this day. And I was like, that's kind of weird. And the other strange part about it is that it's all in Latin. And you can actually translate. I've translated this to the degree I can translate Latin. And, they talk about how on this island there's pygmies 4 feet tall. These four rivers that come out are 100 feet wide. This is the greenest part of this land. By the way, this is Greenland. You can compare it to the North Pole up there. Anyway, some very interesting descriptions that I've never seen before, and I thought that was really strange that that's there. And everything else is accurate. There's Scandinavia. You can see there's Russia. This is the Americas. There's the Hudson Bay, Greenland. Just mysterious islands out here. Now, this little dark part, he actually writes it, that goes into the bowels of the earth, which is kind of interesting. And so we've kind of talked about that already. Spotting the differences here. That's our modern North Pole with no ice. They don't have anything there. It's a close-up of that. There's another map based off of that. These are all in the 1500s. These are all Mercator, Gerard Mercator. Now, this is... Now, I've seen this map for years. Some of you have this on your walls, probably, as a decoration. And I don't know about you, but I wasn't trained and taught very well in my government school. And so I only memorized my geography for about, 10 minutes for the test, and I forgot it. And so you can look at these things for 100 times and never even notice anything wrong. But there's those four islands again up at the top. And they've been there all along. And in fact, it wasn't just him. It was actually an earlier map. This map was from 1531. And there's those four islands again. So needless to say, I got me pretty excited. Like, what in the world is that? And so as I investigated it, I came across a guy named Rodney Clough. He has and if you've known anything about the Hollow Earth and LDS, he's the premier researcher of it. He's been researching this for 30, 40 years, probably 40 now. And he has a website called ourhollowearth.com, and he has this 500-page document where he just documents every scientific evidence, every conceivable bit of data on this. And it's a really, really fascinating document. Oh, Galileo was a big proponent of the Hollow Earth. He has a little, this is a picture of him. He has a little picture of what he felt were concentric levels in the Hollow Earth. And if you know anything about Galileo, he's one of the founding fathers of our modern scientific movement. This is, and by the way, this is not a new theory. This is a very old one. I mean, we got Journey to the Center of the Earth. We've got the Middle Earth and Lord of the Rings, where you go and they have this, and in fact, there's some really, you'll see some things. I think this is where he got some of these ideas from. During the time of Joseph Smith, people postulated that there was this hollow north, and it might be because they were looking at some of these maps. And so let's talk about satellites. Now, this is supposedly a, the description where I found this is a picture that somebody snuck off a NORAD computer showing the satellites going around the Earth. And notice this one little area here that, for some reason, they don't fly over. And I think there's 8,000 different objects that fly around our planet. And for some reason, they can't fly around there. So I did a little research with that. I wanted to see if, and one time I heard that there's satellite data that you could watch and track it. And so I found a site that was doing it, and I tried to time-lapse it, and then because the Earth is, a very big place, satellites take a really long time to update. And so it's really,
it's hard to be patient that long when you have these little icons that you're mapping. But I still could find maybe an area, but didn't quite get me a clear vision of it. Here's another image of some satellite data. Again, there's that opening. Okay, now, if this will play for me, I don't think it will on this projector. Oh, is it playing? Oh, great. Thank you. So I found this is the site. You can go and do this yourself. Go to science.nasa.gov, real-time JTRAC, 3D.html. All these little dots represent satellites. And they had a little feature that allowed us to speed it up 100 times faster. And this little red circle I put there for our benefit, and you can sit there and watch it, and watch it, and watch it, and you'll see these satellites come and then just go around, and they just won't touch that area. And it's pretty interesting, you know, because you can do this yourself. You can go home and test it and try to find that area. There's Greenland. There's those same islands that were in the, but there's this area they can't quite get to. Now, people say it's about 90 miles in diameter is the opening. Now, if you think about 90 miles, that's a long ways away. If you stood on the edge of the, going to the to this place, oh, here's the South Pole. Same thing with the South Pole, right over here on this edge. They can't go over it because I'll explain that. That's a good question. Because if you're flying around, do you know how an orbit works? You're falling, right? Orbit works. You're falling so fast. You're falling at 17,500 miles an hour. Okay. You know, I looked this up. I learned something new last night. Last night I learned this because I always thought when you go up about 200 miles in space, you don't have any gravity. You can float around. Turns out not to be true. You're about 90% of what you weigh. So if you're 100 pounds, you'll still be 90 pounds at 200 miles in space. So how do they have no gravity? It's because they're falling at 17,500 miles an hour around the Earth. Because they're going so fast, they match the curvature of the Earth, so they never fall into the Earth. They never fall down. So that's how they keep going around the Earth. And that's why, just like a plane, when it drops down 300 miles an hour, you can get that, you know, when people are filming, no gravity experience, and they can float around the airplane. That's exactly the same way that the astronauts float around their capsule. It's the same way. And so if there was a hole in the top of the Earth, what would happen if you went to it? You'd fall into it. You'd go right in. You would cease to have your orbit anymore. So there's the, that's the reason. They physically can't go up there. They physically cannot fly there. Right. Oh yeah, yes. They have programmed the satellites to not hit that area because they want to protect their $1 billion investments, right? So they don't want to lose their planes. So yes, they program it. They know this. They know this. This is old news. This is top secret. My brother works for a satellite company. They put it in space to do internet. I asked him to find someone to get a picture that's not photoshopped of the North Pole. He started asking around. He got real scared real fast. And I said, just get me a photo. He says, like, Abe, I don't want to talk to anybody about this. I'm like, what? Okay. I guess that answers that question. Go and try to find a photo of just the North. It's always photoshopped. It's always a false color. You know, it always gets me that even... There's no such thing as black and white photography anymore, but for some reason NASA is still showing pictures that they just took of Mars in black and white. Why is that? Anyway. Okay.
So, are you saying the satellites will fall on the floor?
Yeah, there's not enough momentum. It's a big... They say it starts about 1,200 miles in diameter and starts to slope in there. Now, that's a good point. Let's go back to that. When you're standing on a 90-mile hole, you're not going to see it, okay? I mean, think about how far 90 miles is away from right here. And we're talking Logan to the other side. You know, if you go 60 miles straight up, you're in outer space. You know, the XPRIZE gave those astronauts, $40 million for doing that. It's a significant event. That's a huge distance. And people that go up now, and remember too, it's covered with ice, mountain ice. You can't get through here. Now, I'll talk about a group that tried here in 2006, and I'll tell you how that ended. Somebody died. Now, here's a picture. I don't know where this came from. I don't know what it is. But every time you look up Hollow Earth, they show it. So maybe that's the Hollow Earth. Who knows? Okay, this is a great story. This is, you got to read this one if you want to read anything. You can say, well, somebody has had to have gone there and come back. And this is a story written by Willis G. Emerson in 1908. Now, in his foreword, he says, I did not write this. I am merely helping my friend Olaf Jensen, who told me right before his death to please do it because he knew I was an author. And it's the story of Olaf Jensen and his father, who in 1830s would travel the Nordic seas. They're from Norway. And one time they were out there and they found these mammoth tusks and they got a pretty penny for the ivory. And they says, you know, let's do it again. So they drive out and this little skiff with some supplies, they get lost. They're in bad weather. They're languishing. They're going through these ice mountains. And they get so thirsty, they said, well, we're going to die. But they got so thirsty, they started to drink the water. And it was fresh water. And they couldn't believe it. Some of you probably read this story. And they couldn't believe it. And then they started seeing this little illusion on the horizon of this red sun that was different from the sun they were seeing. They couldn't quite figure it out. Make a long story short, they came, well, I guess that's the storm. So beautifully illustrated, by the way. There's the red sun they kept seeing on the horizon. Okay. It doesn't animate on here, so I've got to keep looking at the screen. So they met this people in a ship, and they described the people as being from 10 to 14 feet tall. Most of them were about 12. Here's Olaf Jensen and his dad. His dad was, he says, 6'4". And he describes them as wearing silk clothes and these knee-high socks and sandals. Didn't understand their language. Didn't understand the power that was being used to put the boat. But they had immediately had somebody start being their translators. And after living a year, they realized that these people believed in Jehovah. And not like they did. They were Norsemen. They believed in Thor and those Nordic gods. And they talked to the high priest of the land. It's quite an interesting story, especially as it relates to the lost tribes of Israel. So they were really interested to hear what they had to say about the outside world. And because they didn't get out much. And so they wanted to know about the technologies, and these guys were just humble fishermen, so I'm sure they didn't give them a lot, but they told them what they could. They says there's so much gold down there, everything was adorned with it, like I guess we adorn things with copper. This is the great high priest in the city of Eden. They actually called it the city of Eden. They were transported around these elephants. Now here's the part where I think the Lord of the Rings story got these elephants. He describes these as 80 feet tall elephants. The people lived 600-800 years old. The old ages, like in the Old Testament, they were living as old as they were discussed in the Old Testament. And he says there's apples as big as your head, huge strawberries, just crazy. Everything, every variety of bird and animal. Now the interesting part that they says that they were taken on a transport, and he describes it as this is a rail. He says they didn't like we do with the mountains in our way. We bulldoze the mountain. They just took a rail, and they would put this monorail machine that they said he has a flywheel in it, like a gyroscope inside that kept it level, and then they would just zoom super fast through these areas as a transportation. So. Anyways, they warned him not to go. They loaded up their ship, and he left, and he could not. They says, don't go. It's too dangerous. But his father and himself. They'd been gone for 2 years. They worried about his mother. And so they gave it a good shot, and they got shipwrecked. His father died. And he says providence was upon him because he was sitting on a... He was able to, you know, swim to an iceberg and wait there, and there happened to be a passing ship. They put him aboard, and he tried to tell them what was happening, and they immediately put him in handcuffs. Thought he was crazy because he'd just been out there for too long. It's hallucinating. Got home, and his uncle had taken over the property. They assumed that he dead, and he lied to people and said, this guy's crazy, and just listened to his story. And he was locked up for about 24 years into the prison until he moved to America, to Illinois, and then to California, and he would not tell a soul because of that experience until he died, until he told his neighbor to please publish his works. And so this is an illustration from the book, too. If you can see, this is a ship. It goes around the edge. And if you're sailing, you wouldn't notice the curvature because it's too gradual. But the way that they stay on the surface of the inner sphere is because the gravity is not actually in the center. It's actually in the center of this. Remember, this is about... If you can imagine going 800 miles, how long does that take you to go to California, right? About Disneyland is about 800 miles. Okay, that's the distance you have to drive to get through. It's a huge landmass. But and Rodney Clough pointed out an experiment they did with gravity, and still people don't even know what gravity is. I personally think it's magnetism. It's the same thing. We live in an electric universe. We just found out, right? But they did an experiment where they wanted to see where the center of gravity was for the Earth, and so they put these plumb lines down these mine shafts that were about a mile long, and then they went down another mile to another mine shaft and put a plumb line, and then they measured the distance between the two plumb lines. Expect now if the gravity was in the center of Earth, they'd expect it to come together. But that's not what they found. They found that it was going out like this way. And so, you know, just throw out that data. By the way, this solves the problem of Santa Claus, right? Living so long, he lives in the North Pole, he's still alive. No, I'm just kidding. They live 800 years, so. Now, I'm just going to briefly talk. Everybody knows Hollow Earth always points to the Admiral Byrd story. In 1947, he flew a plane to the North and South Poles. And people still remember that they heard on the radio that he says, I want to go to the land beyond the North Poles. There's a land there that's fertile. And they remember hearing that he described animals that he saw as mammoths in a green and fertile. He says, this is the most important discovery since we discovered America. This is important. Well, in fact, it was so important... The Nazis believed that this was a true thing. There's a lot of stories of Nazis escaping to the land beyond the North Pole and the South Pole. And so having such a resource, having such an amazing thing there, it's just been really hush-hush ever since. Brian Meekum, who hosts this event, and very generously invited me to talk about this, gave me a book from 1969 talking about this. This is an old story. I'm surprised I didn't know about it until 5 years ago. Okay, listen to this. This is a group from that was doing some research to see how light affects the ice.
Twilight, and occasionally a sun on the horizon at a time of year where there should...
Start that again.
Where we are part, the sun sets in mid-November. Doesn't rise again until later in January. For an hour or two each day, a sliver of light on the horizon bathes this frozen world in a sort of twilight. But here's where our story takes a strange twist. In recent years, the Inuit have reported a brighter sky at this time of year, longer periods of twilight, and occasionally a sun on the horizon at a time of year where there should be none. Their stories caught the attention of Wayne Davidson. He's a resident of Resolute Bay, and his website is full of pictures of strangely shaped suns and other light phenomena. After much discussion, they are thought to be light tricks caused by a warming planet.
It's global warming.
The bending of the light just because of the change in index of refraction.
Now, he thinks it's because it's like water in a glass, even though it's in the air. Somehow that the sun from the other side of the earth, where it's not even seeing, is somehow reflecting through the ocean up into the sky. Because they don't know. And did you notice what color that sun was, by the way? It was red. So that's why I want to show that video at first, because it gives an overview of what people understand. But they're missing something. The sun's not this bright light inside. Let me talk about that. Olof Jensen described the sun as red. But he says that there was, and what, the reason he calls the book The Smoky Gods is because these people were, they believed that that was the throne of God where they were. And that there was this cloud of smoke underneath it that was perpetually there. He says it was as bright as about 2 full moons. It was always bright during the day. And as the earth rotated, there was a darker side because the clouds were only on one side. And so it was an evening. And he says that there was little holes through the clouds that they would look like stars through them. And he says it was a white light. And he says, and he says the reason why the aurora comes out, he believes, is because it's not from the sun coronal mass ejection that's coming. It's from the inner energy from the inner sun that's causing it. And what I thought was really interesting, and I'll show you this. This is a fun little video of the aurora over. This is a satellite falling to Earth, never getting there. And look how bright it is, right in the center. And you notice this little red hue? If you notice, aurora borealis, they're red and green. But when the red and green come together, they're white. Now, I, as a former Disney artist and a designer, graphics person, I am pretty good at Photoshop, and there's effects in light. If you put red and green together, you know, in the same quality and put them together, get the white light. I thought that was interesting. Okay, so that ends part one, I think. Oh, no, that's not quite. This is from NASA. This is the Aurora Australis. This is the aurora coming out. You can see that point right there? That's where it's emanating from, is this little hole. You can actually see it. I want to show you that again. Oops. I'm also going to talk about Philo Dibble here in just a second. For those of you that missed it, I'm sorry if I'm blocking your shot. And a question might rise, does this point correlate to where the satellites don't fly over? Yes, exactly. It exactly correlates with it. If you search, this is all on YouTube. Well, actually, this was not on YouTube. This was a pain in the, you know what, to capture this because it was on like Flickr. That's a Flickr symbol. But if you search for, there's several of these, that NASA Aurora Australis. Okay, it's Aurora Borealis is on the north, Aurora Australis is on the south. Okay, so that's Antarctica, for those of you who don't know your geography, who are trained and taught by our government schools. Okay. So this is, I'm going to skip this one for a second here. Takes a second to skip. I want to read this account, because this was brought up in the former lecture. I am so sorry. Let me sit down. Okay, so Joseph Smith was asked, where are the tribes of Israel located? And in response to it, he drew a picture. And it was witnessed by several people. Philo Dibble, who's in church history all over the place, he's an interesting character, bought the drawing he witnessed from Joseph Smith. He bought it when he died and acquired it. And his son had it. And somebody inquired about it, and he drew a picture in front of the person. Is this the right one? Oh, did I skip one? Okay, you can read that. Oh, here it is. Thank you. This is from Matthew Dalton. This says, now, how was the diagram obtained? The prophet Joseph Smith drew the original drawing a short time before his death, or in 1852, in the presence of several witnesses. Philo Dibble of Springville, Utah, was one of these witnesses and secured the drawing in the month of May of the year 1884. He made a copy thereof, the diagram therein shown being the result. With the possible exceptions of the spheres marked B and C, which I'll show you, were perhaps somewhat smaller, that's key, than what's shown herein. At the time the original drawing was made, the brethren were discussing the disappearance of the 10 tribes and wondering where they were. Upon which the prophet made the drawing and stated that the 10 tribes were located on the sphere marked B. Now some may even do doubt the truth of this diagram of the spheres A, B, and C, and even the statement as to how the diagram was obtained. Yet it is nevertheless true. It was drawn in the presence of William and Sarah Beecher and myself in the year 1884 by Philo Dibble. Above shown as a resident of Springville, Utah, County, Utah. It's nice to see that city still exists, right? His son, Sidney Dibble, who is now alive and is resident of Springville, went before a notary public and an oath testified that this diagram A, B, and C was a true facsimile of a drawing made by his father, and his affidavit David will appear at the close of this book. Now, this drawing is confusing to a lot of people because they don't know. See, if I was not an artist and I was trying to draw a toroidal object of the earth, where the earth went in, this is how I might draw it. And how I explain it to people, this is the same thing as what we're saying. Remember, he says that these were probably a little bit smaller. And it's inverted, and I will show you how I see it as an artist. But if you're walking on the surface of the earth or floating your ship, you get up to the top, and then you go up, down, and under, and then you're in. And he says B was where the lost tribes of Israel were. We'll talk about what C was at the end. Because he didn't mention what C was, but there's a little speculation on my part on that, but that's why you won't hear this anywhere else. Okay? So I'm going to describe this a little bit here. So this is how I would draw it for someone, because I'm an artist. So I would invert it so that you could understand how it works. So here's the ship. You go up, under, and in. It's just inverted. But it's the same principle. Okay. Let's go on to that second one. So this is another very interesting. So as I'm discovering these things, I'm like amazed. I'm like, wow, why didn't the church talk about it? Oh, they did. I was then really the bosom friend and companion of the prophet Joseph Smith. Sometimes when at my house, I asked him questions relating to the past, present, and future, one of which I will relate. I asked him where the 9 1/2 tribes of Israel were. Well, said he, you remember the old cauldron or potash kettle you used to boil maple sap in for sugar, don't you? Yes, I said. Well, he said, they are in the North Pole in a concave just the shape of that kettle. And John the Revelator is with them, preparing them for the return. That's Benjamin Johnson, My Life's Review, 1947. Here's another quote. At the same time, he, Joseph, described the shape of the earth at the poles as being round, elongated, and drew a diagram of it. It's Oliver B. Huntington, Habitants of the Moon. We'll talk about that, too, as well, at the end of this. Okay, now Joseph Smith. Let's talk about Joseph Smith. What did he say? What's in the scriptures about the lost tribes of Israel? After this vision closed, the heavens were again opened unto us, and Moses appeared before us and committed unto us the keys of the gathering of Israel from the four parts of the earth, and leading of the 10 tribes from the land of the north. Okay, we've always heard of this land of the north. Now let me tell you another interesting thing. In the Book of Mormon, it talks about Haggoth building a ship. Which direction did he go? North. And then he got somehow to south. But they came back. They went and they came back and got more supplies, and went back, and then were never heard from again. It's probably covered with ice, and they couldn't get back. Okay, Doctrine and Covenants, section 133. So he shall command the great deep, and it shall be driven back into the north countries. And the island shall become one land. We're going to talk about that here in a few minutes. And the land of Jerusalem and the land of the Zion shall be turned back into their own place, and the earth shall be like as it was like it was in the days before it was divided. And the Lord, even the Savior, shall stand in the midst of his people and shall reign over all flesh. And they who are in the north countries, shall come in the remembrance of before the Lord, and their prophets shall hear his voice. So they have prophets. Probably that high priest is still there. And shall no longer stay himself, and they shall smite the rocks, and the ice shall flow down from at their presence. So they're going to smite some rocks, and ice is going to flow down at their presence. And a highway shall be cast up in the great in the midst of the great deep. Their enemies shall become a prey unto them. This is what I like. This, you know, we're worried about a lot of things happening in today's time. If there's enemies, they're going to become a prey from the lost tribes. You know, we went from in 100 years' time, 100 years ago to this day, we went from horse and cart to nuclear weapons. I mean, and space exploration. It doesn't take a civilization that's righteous and believes in freedom to get technology. And a lot of people speculate that a lot of the UFOs, the little technology that we see out there that people have been seeing since the 40s, a lot of them believe it's the lost tribes. And they would have that technology. I mean, we have it. It's only been 100 years. And they shall bring forth the rich treasures unto the children of Ephraim, my servants. And that's us. And the boundaries of the everlasting hills shall tremble at their presence. And there shall they fall down and be crowned with glory, even Zion, by the hands of the servant of the Lord, even the children of Ephraim. And I've heard commentary on that. That means that they're going to come and get their temple blessings, because that was our blessing to have before them. They get the UFOs, we get the temple covenants. That's pretty cool. Okay. Now this event is so spectacular that the scriptures say when it happens that you will forget the story of Moses bringing the children of Israel out of Egypt. You know, the Ten Commandments, we don't want to watch that anymore. We want to watch the movie about the 10 tribes coming. So here it is. Behold, I will send forth many fishers, saith the Lord, and they shall fish them. After will I send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and from every hill and out of the holes of rocks. But the Lord liveth that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands whither he hath driven them. And I will bring them again into the lands that I gave unto their fathers. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that it shall no more be said, the Lord liveth that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. So they will say, you know, as proof that there's a God, as proof that the Lord lives, see how he brought them out of Egypt? They're not going to say that anymore. They're going to say, as proof that there's a God, they're going to bring them out of the north. The Lord brought them out of the North Pole, the North countries, excuse me. Okay, people always ask, why can't you go up there? And it's because there's military bases all around, and there's flights. People have tried to fly there. In 2006, an LDS group here in this the Wasatch Valley was sponsoring the Yamal, which is a Russian nuclear ice-breaking ship. It's the biggest one they got. It cost $2 million to rent, but they had enough people in interest to get it going. And then they had a guy that was a very experienced expedition guy. And the year they were supposed to go, they were getting excited. They were even going to do a quick flight over the area. And Rodney Clough says that they even got some interest from people like the Rothschilds to come along. But they said no. In fact, at this time, I'd never heard of New World Order, Illuminati, or anything. But he's telling me that these guys are the ones asking to come along. Anyways, the guy leading the expedition in April of 2006 all of a sudden got like 7 brain tumors. And he died on my birthday, July 26, 2006. And it was reported in the Deseret News. I read it for myself. And that canceled the event. And Dr. Brooks Agnew, you may have heard, has tried to get another group to go, and sponsors will come and go, and they just can't get it together for whatever reason. And he doesn't know if it's divine hand keeping it hidden, or if it's, you know, government, or who knows. Who knows? But they don't want you to know that this exists. Now, this is a declassified thing from the Army. My friend just sent it to me about a week ago. It's on YouTube again. It's 31 minutes long. It shows how the Army builds bases up in the North Pole. Here, I'll show you.
On the top of the world, below the surface of a giant ice cap, a city is buried. Today on the island of Greenland, as part of man's continuing efforts to master the secrets of survival in the Arctic, the United States Army has established an unprecedented nuclear-powered Arctic Research Center. Located in a wilderness of ice and snow, Camp Century is 150 miles from Thule, its nearest base of supply. This is an ideal Arctic laboratory, for more than 90% of Greenland is permanently frozen under a polar ice cap which covers all but a few coastal areas of the island. Camp Century is buried below the surface of this ice cap. Beneath it, the ice descends for 6,000 feet. In this remote setting, less than 800 miles from the North Pole, Camp Century is a symbol of man's unceasing struggle to conquer his environment, to increase his ability to live and fight if necessary under polar conditions. This is the story of Camp Century, the city under ice.
Okay, they go on for 30 minutes showing how they build this base on the Earth. So go find that, search it. It's a wonderful thing. There's the Yamal that they were going to rent. But they put nuclear power sources in there. It's an amazing construction process. This is 1950. Okay, this is 60 years ago, right? Or longer. It's 20 years before I was born. Okay, the technology exists to do that. It's just so if people think that's a bunch of stuff. Okay, part two. Now, watch this.
On the Earth, which route or route to get here, the way it is now. Here's our world, our planet Earth, floating in space. We will be going backward in time. Imperfectly, but done in a very disciplined manner. Please notice there is no subduction, no rotation of tectonic plates, no twisting, no form fitting, no altering shapes or sizes. It would be impossible. Impossible for these continental plates to fit together perfectly without this being true, and yet the upper tectonic plates fit together perfectly on a much smaller planet. Yes, there's been some erosion, landslides, blah, blah, but overall this activity is insignificant. There is a kind of conspiracy of silence among certain scientists. They know, but are not telling you, that the upper tectonic plates of Earth also join in the Pacific. Not partially. They join totally. You are asked to believe that the continents swim or drift about willy-nilly, bumping and crashing as if they were on a greased skillet. This is not true. The simple truth is apparently too upsetting to too many apple carts. We're now going forward in time to show how the actual growth of the Earth took place. Imperfect as the details, but the overall is nailed. Antarctica, as you see, has become subtropical. Africa on a smaller globe moved way downward under the globe. In fact, for hundreds of millions of years, the bottom of Africa was the South Pole. South America's tail goes under and wraps around the bottom of Africa, then incredibly joins coast with Antarctica. 65 million years ago and more, these continents were joined, and marsupials like the duck-billed platypus roamed from Australia, Antarctica, and across southern South America and up into Africa, the platypus. Dinosaurs roamed all over this world on the upper tectonic plate because there were no oceans, just shallow seas. Here today, Antarctica is frozen over, and Australia and its surrounding islands are the remaining home of marsupials.
Okay.
Do you see how broadly the Pacific is opening compared to the Atlantic? This is exactly why the knee-jerk Pangaea theory exists. The Pacific spread is too difficult to easily visualize because it's so big. The Atlantic spread is so obvious that a child would recognize it. but they are the same.
Okay, I think that's the end. Now, if you look at a map that has the ocean floor on it, you can look at these stretch marks. You can almost follow them like a little line. Do you see these? They're little lines that show where they've been kind of spread apart. Now, the government schools teach you that subduction and that somehow the you know, they form and, you know, all kinds of crazy ideas and how these all fit together. I really like this because this explains a lot to us. And I don't know if, have you got, has a lot of people seen this before? You haven't seen this? Okay. Neil Adams, I like him. He's another artist like myself. It's great to have the ability to visualize something because this is a very complex thing. Now, this is not a new theory. It's called the expanding Earth theory. And I went to BYU and talked to Janie Rodenvah. Now, she's the only planetary geologist in Utah, as far as I could know. I thought I found a meteor, and I was looking up for one. And while I was asking her if it was a meteor, and she's like, nah, it's basalt. It was disappointing because I could have had a $300,000 rock. Anyway, but then while I was there, I said, well, just while I have you, you're a planetary geologist, let me ask you about this expanding Earth theory. Ah, she says, you know, the only way it could be true is if the Earth was growing. Wow. You know, that's cool. She confirmed it. The only way that this could happen is if the Earth was growing. She says, the way that we explain it is subduction and things moving around. But it's really strange that if you wrap the Earth around on a smaller planet, they all fit together like a puzzle. That's really strange. Now, I'm running out of time. I don't know if I'm being boring, but Dr. James Maxlow, the geologist and proponent of the expansion technomics, look him up, watch his documentary. He has these models. This is an old model. They just decided not to go with it. It kind of shows how the expansion takes place. He explains in his documentary, or in his presentation, that you can actually go and on the ocean floor. See, there's no. What's strange is that on the ocean floor, there's no fossils ever found. They're always on the land masses. They're always on the land where they used to be. And in other words, giving the conclusion that these oceans are actually relatively new. They're not old enough to have fossils. And these different colors represents the different spreads of the Earth. And you can literally take the red section and put it together, the yellow section, put it together, the green section, and put it together. It fits like an absolutely perfect puzzle. And if you're very careful and diligent, you can go to the Earth itself and see how they've drug across. It's amazing. It's fantastic. Had a friend tell me once, he says, you know, Abe, if this stuff is true, what you're saying is true, it's like that feeling you get when you peek at Christmas and you get to see what your present is a couple days before. You get excited. There's some exciting things coming, I think. This is a way more exciting story than we evolved by accident. Anyway, and unto Eber were born two sons. The name of the son was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided. And his brother was named Joktan. And these are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations and their nations. And by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. So before the flood, the earth wasn't divided. But afterwards, it says in the Bible that it was. Peleg means division. Okay, and then we have the next scripture. It says, and he shall utter his voice out of Zion, and he shall speak from Jerusalem, and his voice shall be heard among all people, and it shall be as a voice as the voice of many waters, and the voice of a great thunder which shall break down the mountains, and the valleys shall not be found. And he shall command the great deep, and it shall be driven back into the north countries. And the islands shall become one land, and the land of Jerusalem and the land of Zion shall be turned back to their own place, and the earth shall be like as it was in the days before it was divided. You've heard this scripture before, right? This is in Doctrine and Covenants, section 133. So the earth is divided, then it comes back together. That's pretty weird. We're going to talk about why I think that is. If we have time, I don't know. We're running kind of short on time. Okay, we'll keep going. All right. So let's see if this is part three. I will hurry. Okay, that was answering the ring bell. If we need to go back to that, we can. Part three, the living earth. Okay, do we believe the earth is alive? Who believes the earth is a living being? I do. This is in the Pearl Great Price. And it came to pass that Enoch looked upon the earth, and he heard a voice from the bowels thereof, saying, woe, woe is me, the mother of men. I am pained. I am worried because of the wickedness of my children. When shall I rest and be cleansed from the filthiness which has gone before out of me? Notice she says, out of me. Well, when will my creator and I, when will my creator, I, me, I think I skipped something, that I may rest and righteousness for a season abide upon my face. And when Enoch heard these, the earth mourned, he wept and he cried to the Lord saying, oh Lord, wilt thou not have compassion upon the earth? Wilt thou not bless the children of Noah? This is after he sees that they were destroyed by the flood. Okay, now if the earth is alive, does it mean it's alive? Does it have a spirit? Yeah, we'd say yes. Does it have a mind? Does it have organs? Does it have blood? You know, some questions. If you're a living being, to be alive, to think, you have to have processes in place to do that. So having this idea, I looked for features on the earth that were kind of odd that maybe not be explained. Because if the earth was a living being, you know, we're looking at it from the ground level. We don't see things on a worldly level, especially we don't get many good data points from the government. But here's this thing. It's called the Eye of Sahara. This is 24 miles in diameter. You can kind of see it. This is a really interesting feature. I bring it because just one example. This is closer to it. And the reason they call it an Eye of Sahara is because this is 24 mile in diameter structure that looks like an eye. There's a really great photographer who photographs eyes. And if you look at them real close, they have these amazing little features. You know, who knows? There's an economics book I was reading once, and he describes this mystery. He says, if you can solve this mystery, please write to me. He says, in the Asian area and the Middle East, there's all these borders of the, there's been, in the last 5,000 years, 14,000 wars, okay? In 5,000 years, there's been 14,000 historically documented wars. Wars happen everywhere. Notice that the Lord was mourning over the stuff that was happening on the face of her. The mystery is this. Wherever there's oil, that it marks the ancient border of where all these people were battling. Everywhere there's oil, it's where everybody battled. And they cannot figure out how this could happen. In the living earth model, maybe the earth is trying to heal it. And maybe that's oil, I don't know. It's weird that oil is red when it's in its form. You can turn blood into oil, literally, through a chemical process. Rodney M. Clough, look at this document. This is a really good document, the living earth. He thinks it's a living organism. Every year, there's a CO2 level that goes up and then down, up and down, up and down. Just like somebody breathing. Every year goes up. Just in a cycle. By the way, if you increase CO2 three times, plants grow three times as fast. They grow. Plants love CO2. It's not bad. It's good. So all this environmental scare on CO2, it actually helps plants grow, and they've done films on that, by the way. But I think it's interesting that there's breathing, maybe, right? Just an idea. So what is the real world like? What is the real world like? This is kind of concluding this. You know, there's a lot of diagrams of how might the hollow earth be. There's legends in Tibet. If you go behind the river, that you can get down to the hollow earth. Some people think the mammoth cave. If you read the book of this apocrypha book, it's called the Book of Adam and Eve. When the Lord casts them out of Eden, he says he sends them to the Cave of Treasures. The cave. Takes them to the cave. You know, what, I pointed this out to a friend once. He said, you know, it's kind of like this is the, because the people in the according to Olaf Jensen, the people worshipped this is the throne of where Christ lived, or God, Jehovah. Kind of like a celestial world. And this inner part is the Eden, kind of like a terrestrial world. And on this outer point, it's kind of like a telestial world, kind of like three worlds in one. Kind of interesting. We live on the bottom part of the earth. We live at the part where we can only live about 100 years before. We can't even live 30 years before our teeth fall out. That's how poor we are. And people said, well, why would people live on the earth? I said, well, we live in our houses. We protect ourselves from the environment. We're hit with radiation. We live very short lives. So what does this all mean? What does the earth really look like if it's a living being? Remember this picture I told you of? What is sea? They never described it. And why is the earth expanding? Why is it getting bigger? Now, I wasn't going to tell you this stuff, but I said, Brian, is it okay if I tell this crowd this stuff? And she says, yeah, go ahead. Okay, so this is a little bit of speculation, but I want to back it up with some research. Okay, if I were to draw the earth, I might draw it this way, as a living organism. Central sun illuminating it inside. And if I were to take Joseph Smith's drawing literally, there's this other pocket, maybe with its own sun too. But what is this? What is down here? It's a good question. Okay, when you search Mother Earth, this is the images you come up with. It's a natural image. Let's see what one we have left. Okay, I'm going to read a scripture. Really interesting. Joseph Smith translated this. This is in Revelations chapter 12. Okay, I want you to see this image. Here's the earth, here's the sun, here's the moon. All right, and then this, now it's talking about Revelations, the signs of the second coming of Christ and the things that are going to happen in the last days. And in chapter 12 it says, and there appeared a great wonder in heaven. What's heaven? Outer space. A woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet. And upon her head, a crown of 12 stars. So there's a woman clothed with the sun and the moon at her feet. It sounds like the earth to me, Mother Earth. And she being with child, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven. And behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his head. His tail drew up the third part of the stars of heaven, and it cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, the earth, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. She brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God, to his throne. So, have you heard of the new heaven and a new earth? And the woman fled into the wilderness, and where she had a place prepared for God that she should feed her there 1,260 days. And it goes on. It's interesting. It's just interesting. Now Joseph Smith, of course, explained that as that the woman is the church. But, you know, there's no footnotes. There's no footnotes in that area. I just think it's interesting. Okay. Now, there's a book called by Eric Skousen, and I really appreciate Brian, forgive me this reference, that backs me up on this conclusion. Okay, Earth in the Beginning by Eric Skousen on page 79. He says, the birthing of planets is another principle of the God science of earth building. The creation of planets through a birth process is according to an eternal pattern by which all higher orders of living beings come into an organized existence. It is by the multiplication of lives that eternal worlds are created. Joseph Smith explained, asking, was there ever a son without a father? Makes you wonder who the man in the moon is, right? No, I'm just teasing. Wherever did a tree or anything spring into existence without a progenitor? And everything comes in this way. Everything comes in this way. The prophet John Taylor also confirmed that this principle of life is the origin of our world, not only of this world, but of others. Furthermore, he added, without the process of planetary procreation and birth, quote, there could be no worlds. All would be chaos, all would be darkness. All would be death, and the works of God would amount to nothing. All this would indicate that the earths are not created separately and independently, but are descended from one another. Where did the earth come from? Asked Heber C. Kimball, replying, from its parent earth. So why is the earth expanding? Wherefore, be not deceived, but continue steadfast, looking forth for the heavens to be shaken, and the earth to tremble, and to reel to and fro as a drunken man. For the valleys to be exalted, and for the mountains to be made low, and for the rough places to become smooth, and when the angel shall sound his trumpet. So there's something, an event that's going to cause the whole earth to shake and reel to and fro like a drunken man. And then the earth's going to come back together. Is the earth given birth to a son? I don't know. But it seems like there needs to be an event that happens that allows the earth to go back to its original form. By the way, the mountains are basically, these things are stretch marks. The mountains, if you can look at your finger, this is the best way I can explain it. When you have your finger curled in a natural form, when it gets stretched out, you get these little ridges. That's what mountains are. Okay? And when they go back, when they get unstretched, they smooth over. Mountains become valleys, and valleys get smoothed over. The earth becomes a smooth place, just like it was in the beginning. And the mountains of the earth, and if you look at Neil Adams, search him, Neil Adams, he'll talk about how all these mountains are just simply stress points of the earth stretching out. Okay, we are almost done. I think these are the last two slides. There's a song we're going to sing when this all happens. This is part of this song. The Lord hath redeemed his people, and Satan is bound, and time is no longer. The Lord hath gathered all things in one. The Lord has brought down Zion from above, referring, I believe, to the city of Enoch. We didn't talk about that. And the Lord hath brought up Zion from beneath. And the earth has travailed and brought forth her strength, and the truth is established in her bowels. And the heavens have smiled upon her, and she's clothed with the glory of her God, for she stands in the midst of her people, of his people. Okay, this is really quick. What about other planets? Moon has a hollow north opening. That's the moon. Mars has one. Venus has strange structures, twin vortexes on the poles, all around the poles. Saturn has this amazing, what is this called, a hexagon that rotates with the Earth. It's as big as four Earths. You can put four Earths across here. It's huge. Jupiter has unexplained aurora borealis around the poles. Auroras. I guess they're not borealis. There's another shot of it. So, a lot of people ask, and you know, I've heard it until this is the last slide. You know, why are we living on the outside of the Earth? Maybe other people are living in the inside. Joseph Smith said that the moon was inhabited. Brigham Young said the same thing, as well as the sun, but celestial beings live on the sun. If the moon is inhabited, I could see how they could live in the moon. We're a wicked world. We killed the Savior. And there's some books that talk about, I think the Book of Enoch talked about how the Lord had to turn the whole world upside down because the wickedness of the people had to kill everybody on the whole face of the earth. That's how wicked we were before Christ came. And he says, behold, the Lord maketh the earth empty, and maketh it waste, and turneth it upside down, and scatter abroad the inhabitants thereof. I think we're wearing that exception. It would make sense that we have to live on the outside. We're brought near to another star to make us forget that we used to live on the inside. Thank you. Okay, they say I got 5 minutes for questions. Any questions? Well, apparently that was a bad question, no, just kidding. This is where they say Eden was. So our parents, our first parents, if you read the book of Genesis, it talks about the four rivers coming out of it. It's the inner earth, and so we used to live there. They said, well, I thought Eden was in Missouri. Well, it is on the other side of it. Adam Diam Amen was on this surface, but Eden is on the interior, protected. Okay, another question. Well, you've heard prophets talk about it being a terrestrial world, not a telestial one, a terrestrial one, higher than ours. So it would be, it's more glorious than ours. Ours is like stars, theirs is like the moon.
Two things. One, you said that this is an old story.
Yes.
In the book of Enoch, which I've read, I don't know who else has read that book, the Ethiopian version, Enoch, at one point in the book, is taken by this angel. And he said, he took me down into this big, deep, deep canyon, dark canyon, where he could no longer see the light, basically. And he said, he took him down into the middle of the earth. And he said, there's a sun in there, and there's an ocean in there, and Enoch wrote about that.
Out of the mouth of two or three witnesses.
The other thing is, when I read the alleged diary of Admiral Byrd,
right.
And he talks about the tractor beam that pulled him into the
earth. Right.
Do you think that that's a legit version of his diary, or is that
Personally, I don't think it's a legit version, personally, and that's why I didn't bring it up. But it's interesting. I did read a story that I thought was legit where somebody was mining and then a craft in the 1930s or 40s came out and he talked to him and met with him.
Apparently, yeah. His relatives are very quiet about his real diary. I think
it does. Yeah, well, you know. We know what happens to whistleblowers, right? So, it's a top secret. It's a top secret.
Who is he talking about?
He's talking about Admiral Richard Byrd, who was sponsored by the government to fly over the North Poles. And we talked about it briefly. Any other questions? Yeah. Okay, I have time for one more question. Thank you for that comment.
Just an email address, or how do we get a hold of you?
The best way to get hold of me through this group, or if you want to write down abeday@comcast.net, you can, Abe Day, my name, A-B-E-D-A-Y. Yeah, this is time. That's why I present it, because there's so much out there. It's just amazing. It's amazing. So thank you very much.